most exciting part I'm invested in the most and Tech Tea is invested in the most is the data. I don't think it's being spoken about enough in that way, but AI is fantastic. And right now you can pretty much like create an AI tool in a matter of days off the back of other AI training tools. The power lies in who has the data.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Now, I've been told I need to share more about what Women of Web3 actually does as an organization. So recently, we've been cooking up some interesting partnerships. I can share more soon. We've been prepping content such as LinkedIn Lives. The next one is going to be about creating a great elevator pitch. And we've been delivering Web3 workshops for businesses like a premium spirits company. And they own Maker's Mark, Sipsmith, Courvoisier, that kind of thing. And alongside Women of Web3, I'm also running The Sidechain. We are gearing up to launch our foundational course about Web3 and AI. It's aimed at small businesses and freelancers. So if that's of interest, head to thesidechain.co to find out more. As for today's guest, Toby Ajala is an incredible entrepreneur. I came across her agency around a year ago. She's an ex-Apple engineer, and now she runs her own software development house called Tech Tea. So as you can imagine, being ex-Apple, she has incredibly high standards when it comes to design anything tech related. And I'm excited to jump into her story about how she came to run her own business. It's a story that starts when she was still at university on a night out, actually. And then we're going to hear some of her philosophies about where the next iteration of the internet is headed. So without further ado, here's Toby. Welcome to the show, Toby. Could you start off by saying who you are, what you do? How did you get here?
My name is Toby Ajala. I am a technologist, an entrepreneur, an angel investor, but I'm most known for being the CEO and founder of Tech Tea. Tech Tea is a software house that builds early adoption, innovative software solutions for brands and businesses all over the world. And at my core, I'm really just a tech dork, really.
I think I did actually know that about you. I knew that about you, that you're a dork, but you wouldn't know it from the way that you dress because you're always impeccably dressed.
I appreciate that.
I'd love to know more about your own career journey, because I know you've spent time at Apple. You've ended up starting your own software house, Tech Tea. But could you give me a bit of a sort of potted history of like how this has come together? And because I'm sure there's been a few principles that have kind of pushed you that direction.
My career started as a child. I used to draw. I used to be an artiste. And I found myself quite fond of it. I thought I was actually pretty good. And my mum said I was pretty good as well. So I'll take that. And for 1 year, when I was 10, I went to boarding school. And when my mother was dropping me off, she gave me a new sketchbook. And she kind of said, put it on my bunk bed and said, keep drawing. You know, you'll be fine. You'll enjoy it. I ended up loving it, by the way. But she's like, you'll be fine. You'll love it. Keep drawing. And it was during that year that those kind of drawings of any and everything I was drawing as a child turned into mini inventions. But they weren't literal physical inventions. I was drawing these and sketching these on paper. Two most notable ones was a diaper suppressing bin. My brother was really young at the time and I hated the smell of his Pampers and stuff. So it was this idea of you put the Pamper in the bin, you close the lid and you can't smell anything, all is well. And then the second one that I remember very vividly was a self-feeding fish tank. My mother was a single mother, incredible mother. She still is. But she was like many mothers, no pets. Me and my siblings weren't allowed anything. And that included fish, because when I asked for fish, she said, are you going to clean it and feed it? And I was like, crap, probably won't be able to do that really well. And I'm only 10, right? So I sketched out this self-feeding fish tank that could clean itself and could dispense food. When I got back home and over the years, I drew here and there, but athletics was my main thing at the time. But that's for another podcast for another day. But by the time I was 14, I started to pick up the sketching a little bit more. And I showed one of my favorite cousins and he said, what is that? And I was so offended. I was like, do you not see what I'm showing you? This is a self-feeding fish tank. That's the fish. This is the tank. That's the food dispensing from the top. And he just didn't get it. So I turned 15 and it was the summer before I went to college to do my A-levels. And I went to the library, my local library in Shepherd's Bush. I was living in Acton at the time. And I went to this librarian, bless her, she must have been 80. And I said, hey, I have this drawing, but I want it to move. But I know I don't want to be an animator. Can you help me with what books I should find to help me do this? She looks at me like, I've got no idea what you're talking about. And she ends up saying, I have a grandson who is a software engineer and he makes pages on the interweb move. And I said, okay. And she walks me to the software section and there's very little books there, but there was a Java textbook. If I could like flip over, I've got it at home. It's really thick. I still have it. And I said, okay. I flipped open, flipped through the pages, said, frankly, why not? She gave me some paper from the printer and a pen and she sat me down and I just went at it. And then within the space of a month, I knew the entire book at the front. So I knew all of Java and I could recite it without ever touching a computer. So I did have a laptop. I had an Acer at the time. And I picked that up after that month. And for the entirety of the first year of my college, so 15 into 16 years old, I learned seven other software languages through library textbook, Reddit conversations, random things I could find out online.
Oh, this is amazing. And I agree with your original assessment that you're a dork, but I love it. I'm so impressed with the motivation to go and learn seven or eight different coding languages when you're 15, 16.
Thank you. But the one thing I like to say is sometimes I can be very oblivious. I had no idea. I didn't know a single person in my life that had any context for it, towards it. So I was just doing it because I was good at it. I like to do things I'm good at. And it just seems something like I understood. I got it. It was fine. Let's do more. And yeah, it's the stuff I do in my spare time. By the time I got to university, I had done lots of like random projects. But I went to university to study electrical, electronic engineering and went to Manchester Metropolitan first year and got really high grades. So I transferred to University of Birmingham. By this time, I was 19, 20. And I'd been creating a whole bunch of things and I had picked up WordPress along the way as well. And I was just developing. And then a friend of mine was working at a real estate agent and she was going to leave a party on a Friday night early. But once one person starts to leave, everyone starts to filter off. And I was having a great time. So I said, no, don't go. And she said, I have to go. I got this new job at this estate agent and they've tasked me with helping find a software company to build the new website. And I haven't done any of it. I don't know what I'm doing. And I need to get in there early. And I said, I'll do it. Imagine me begging my friend outside of a club in a really short skirt. Like I can build this company's website. Trust me. And she was like, okay, like come into the office, I guess, and see what you can do. But she had we didn't have any explanation or any understanding of what we were actually doing. So I wore the one shirt and the one pair of trousers I had. You know, at university, everyone has a shirt and a pair of trousers. And I went into the office and it was supposed to be just, hey, can I please do the website for whatever you'd pay me? It ended up being this incredible 3-hour conversation I had with the owner called Brian. He ended up laughing and talking about his kids. And we spoke about my history. And he said, okay, great. Yeah, let's do it. So he opens his drawer. He writes me a check for £3,000. And that was my first commissioned piece of business. However, throughout all the conversation, when you're having a good time with someone, sometimes you don't deal with, you know, the professional stuff or, you know, the things that maybe you should always discuss. So I'm leaving. Thanks, Brian. It was lovely meeting you. I can't wait. We agreed I'll deliver it in 4 weeks. My hand is on the doorknob of his office to leave. And he says, hold on one second. I never asked the name of your company. My back is to him. And I was crapping myself. I didn't even think that far. This was 2012. And I said, tech out of like sheer panic. You know, when something feels like it's happening for like a lifetime and it's like 2 seconds. So I just went, tech. I didn't even turn around. I just said, tech. And he said, tech. I said, shit. He said, tech shit. And he absolutely went off. He thought it was hilarious that the company was called Tech Shit. And it wasn't called Tech Shit. I hadn't figured out what I was going to say. So him laughing gave me like 3 seconds. And then I whipped my head back. Because in that moment, I realized people call me T, people call me Toby, people call me all sorts. And I said, no, T. And then he says, Tech Shit T. And I said, no, Tech T. Tech T is the name. Tech T is the company name. I didn't realize you were going to ask. And I just mumbled my way through it. I thought I'd lost it. I thought he was going to ask me for the check back and tell me to get out. But he just kind of laughed. He thought it was funny. And I was like, yeah, Tech T. He was like, oh, okay, I like it. It's nice. It's good. And he was like, yeah, go ahead. I'll have a good rest of your Saturday morning and I'll see you later. And that was it. That was it. And I remember at the time, I can't remember when banks used to open on Saturdays, but in the UK, they started to open on Saturdays sometime within the last couple of years of 2012. And I went right to the bank, deposited the check. And by Monday morning, it was in my account. But I wasn't going to build this thing myself because I'm doing a degree. So I went to my lectures and bless him, Constance Constantino, an incredible lecturer, and he was very strict. 5 minutes and my door's locked, no more. So I entered 4 minutes in. Monday morning, he holds the seminars. So it's all engineering disciplines, computer, mechanical, chemical, everyone. So I enter 4 minutes late. And he says, Toby, you're never late. Please just don't disrupt. And I said, no, I'm actually here to disrupt. Can I have 5 minutes of everyone's time? Very ballsy. And he says, no, one, you came in late, now you're asking to overtake my class, this is very rude. And I said, please, like, trust me, I've never done anything like this. You can imagine it's really important. He says, okay. I said, okay. He says, okay, you've got 2 minutes or 1 minute, something like that. And I said, okay, who here knows PHP, HTML, and CSS? And pin drop, nobody. I was so embarrassed. And I said, okay, well, I've got a project and for 3 weeks, I'll give you £300. Hands went flying. And then I was like, okay, now we're in business. And I said, okay, everybody who said yes, just like see me after the seminar. And like people are passing me notes down during the seminar. And essentially that is the agency model. You get work. And then you have employees, staff, sometimes freelancers to do that work for you or with you. So I hired 2 people, gave them 300 apiece, and they helped me build. I designed the whole thing and built the foundations. It was on WordPress and they added the HTML and CSS and the JavaScript. We all worked together on it. They got 300 apiece. I kept the rest, bought trainers and paid my rent and delivered it in the 4th week. And they loved it. They used that platform for that website for years. And that was it. When I realized that that was the case, I did that time and time again through university. I actually failed that year, took a year to work in the Apple store, went back to university, really long story. By all that time, I was done and it was 2017. I incorporated the company that I'd been running around calling Tech Tea for years at this point. But I didn't know how to get it off the ground. Projects were still really small, nothing more than 3,000 we ever got for any particular project. But I was on an apprenticeship scheme through that up until 2017. And then I got a job working on a team at BBC for 2 months. And then I got a contract with Thomson Reuters for, I think it was like 4 months. And in that 4th month, I got a call, most random call of my life, from Apple. Said, hey, we've heard you've been doing some cool things. I'm like, how? They said, oh, we just heard. Would you like to come in for an interview? And I said, yes, absolutely. Because my dream was to be an Apple engineer by the time I turned 40. That was my goalpost. At this point in time, I'm 25. So what's going on? No, I think I was earlier. It was 23, 24. And I went in not anticipating that I'd actually get the job. but I did. And I worked there. I got a couple of promotions. And bear in mind, Tech Tea was all still an established organization at this point. I just didn't know how to get bigger business. So I do small projects in between my day job at Apple. And then I left because I didn't have enough time to do both. And I thought now was the time to take Tech Tea full time. And I kind of asked Apple to bring some of that work over. Very blessed that they obliged. And technically, Apple was our first major client under Tech Tea full time for Toby. And then it just grew from there. Once you got Apple on the books, you kind of, it's kind of easy to get everybody else to come along. And that's how my career as Tech Tea started and is currently going. Long story, like I said, apologies, but there are lots of nuances I even missed in there, but I hope that gives you an idea.
An amazing story. And I'm also just so impressed that you were so enterprising from such a, like from a young age, or, you know, just having the ballsiness to like get up in front of everybody and say, right, who can do this? I'll pay you to do it. Let's go and make it happen. I really admire that. I think it's really cool. It's also, I feel like you don't get as many women doing that. I love to see it basically. I really like the premise of Tech Tea, and we've talked before about you've got this kind of obsession with excellence. I really admire that. And it does feel a slightly like obsessive desire towards excellence. I think that's a really good thing. But just thinking about like, what do you actually typically make with Tech Tea? Like what kind of thing would you be building or be briefed on? Or is it more sort of creative? What kind of thing?
It varies, which is what I actually love, because at the foundation, our core is about creating software that actually matters. And that is about the technology that comes next. And that's the element of the early adoption and the innovation that we actually do. So when it comes to what industry, we don't particularly have a specific industry that we work with more than one more than another. However, we do a lot of luxury fashion, a lot of e-commerce, a little bit of banking and finance, and most recently, some government systems as well. And the idea is, I have this theory that I'm still working on, and I haven't spoken about it out loud, so I'm glad this is a platform that welcomes that kind of thing. However, I have this theory that we've kind of lost the kind of hunger and the eagerness to build truly exceptional technology. And we might be able to get into this a little later, but I think it's why Web3 had this huge boom and then this insane drop off as well, because all the concepts and the conversations that were being had for the most part were correct. It's that execution and that eagerness to be or to produce very, very good technology is what I feel has caused those kind of things to not come to fruition in the way that they should have. So when it comes to what do we actually build, it looks like a lot of AR and VR within luxury fashion, within the Web3 space. That boom really kind of put us in a position to be recognized for the work that we do in that space. Quite notably, we worked on Gucci's Gucci Garden, the virtual experience. In the very early stages, we were doing a lot of AR and VR in 2018-19, which at the time kind of felt very game-like, as I think most can imagine, because if you look at a lot of experiences now, it does feel and look and is even targeting towards that gamification element. However, it also looks like building, what we do also looks like building a trading application with Deutsche Bank in 2018. And then when asked, how is this innovative, applying machine learning, which essentially ended up also growing into AI way back when it wasn't really a conversation. So I like to tell people that when we tried to sign Deutsche Bank, it was really interesting. Little old me kind of going into this office with all these suits, having to code on the spot, because I thought that was the only way I could kind of prove that this is what innovation means, because when you're trying to explain it to people who are at the helm of deciding which type of innovation should be put into an organization like that, but aren't very technical or aren't technical at all, but more managerial or have great leadership skills, sometimes, more times than not, actually, in my opinion, the answer is to show them. And sometimes that means coding on the spot, which is a nice little party trick. But I hope that answers your question. It's a mixed bag, but it's about really getting into what is next for a particular industry and working within brands and businesses within that industry to build something really cool that they can still love and use 2 to 5 years down the line.
I really like that. And I like the sound of your party trick, but, you know, showing, not telling is actually sometimes really valuable, especially in this kind of emerging tech area of like, we can paint a picture of where things are going, but actually sometimes you need to show people the actual products or how it solves problems. So I really like the idea of the kind of live coding exercise for making it make sense to people. You're obviously someone that's deeply fascinated by tech. And I also know that you used to work at Apple, so I will also make you talk about that. But I'd love to know what your views are on the metaverse, the kind of much talked about metaverse. Like, is the metaverse dead? It only seems to be talked about in quite extreme terms. Where would you see things going?
What the masses positioned and what became the main understanding that most people had is dead, because it had no real legs. It didn't. If we're being very transparent and really looking back, it was some cool kids and some people with cachet or people with good reputations seeing an opportunity for that next stage of what the internet is and saying, okay, if that guy says it is, and he's cool, or he's worked there, or he's done that before, he's likely right. And I'm hearing it here and there. So yeah, I'm going to do too. I'm going to invest in that. I'm going to buy that. The first time I heard about the metaverse, I actually can't remember. It was a long time ago and it was on Reddit. And there very commonly, the metaverse was used in a book that was published in the 1980s or 1990s or something. And it had nothing to do with what we define it to be today. However, when I was having the conversations about the metaverse in 2019, 2020, 2021, as that boom began to happen, the conversation was with software developers and software engineers. And it was a lot more critical than people may have imagined, because we were saying to ourselves, if we're building this, even as software engineers, what is the value add? What's the real return on investment? What does that look like 2, 3, 4, 10 years from now? And there was no real answer. And for that, it was fun to build. Because if you know any good, true, eager software developer, we build anything just because we can, or just because we want to, or just to like get over the hump of, that's a nice challenge. Okay, let me build it, see if it actually exists, and I'll move on. And there's no, you know, sometimes there's actually no skin in the game. It's just the exercise of building and creating technology. And that is where my little bubble existed. However, my bubble was of software developers and engineers. And I had to take a step out of that bubble and kind of get back into my CEO gear and go out and talk to organizations and on panels about the metaverse. It was an opportunity for people to get onto what they thought was the next thing, because they know something is coming. When I'm speaking to these software developers and software engineers, Web 2, as it exists, it's not that we've done everything, but we kind of have achieved its limits. So naturally, there is a Web 3. And there was a Web 1. We're in Web 2. And Web 2, I believe, is going to exist for a very long time and is going to be part of Web 3. Web 3 is an iteration of the internet. And the metaverse is a component of that. Same way NFTs are a component of Web 3. I think AI will essentially become the main component of Web3. Not that it never existed in Web 2, because it exists today and we are still in Web 2. However, it will be the major driving force for Web 3. So to say, is the metaverse dead? What it was being defined as in 2021, 2022, yes, I would say is dead, because all that money's gone. People ran with that money so fast. Like, they got it from different businesses and organizations who thought that that was the right thing to do, and they ran off with it. However, the premise and the basis of a lot of those things, I think, still exists and won't be given the same level of excitement, because it already existed. Now it just is. So if at the time Gucci Garden, and still is, it's huge, it was incredible, even though there were elements of it that we've seen before where you can move through a physical space virtually. However, that interaction of a special place or an activation being given a portal solely within this digital realm, I think we're going to see more and more of that. We've been seeing it for years at this point. I do believe, especially within luxury fashion, it's going to thrive and become more of a norm. I see an off-the-shelf tool that you can use to build an AR, VR virtual experience, sort of like how Wix and a Shopify, Squarespace, all of those things, it's no code, low code. I think the metaverse as a solution will also become no code, low code. Somebody somewhere in California is going to create a solution for that. And that will be something that every time a luxury brand does a, you know, campaign, there's also this easy, quick virtual experience they can pop up to. And that's where I think it's going to exist. I think there is a really good place for the metaverse under the assumed explanation of the metaverse within banking and finance. I've spoken about this a couple of times before, but banking and finance have a huge frustration when it comes to customer service. And if you can make a virtual, people don't like going into physical banks, but if you can make that a virtual experience, I believe that is a big moneymaker for organizations, banks. But I also think it really satisfies a more of a Western world feel, Europe, the Americas. But I think the hype and what people positioned it to be at the time is gone. However, the people that still care about the technology and are still working on the technology that matters, are still building it to make sense.
So you mentioned that AI, you see that as a massive component of what comes next for the internet, which I'd absolutely agree with, or, you know, for Web3. Evidently, AI is an enormous subject. It's not just a series of prompts that we put into a chatbot. But which aspect of AI or generative AI or any of those parts would you say you're most interested in or excited about in terms of its potential?
The purpose of AI is to make our lives easier, contrary to what is being really elevated at the moment around, it's going to take all of our jobs, certain sectors are never going to exist anymore, that kind of hype and, quite frankly, fear-mongering. Some of it is true. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Some of it is actually very true and has almost already begun to happen, because if you look at kind of like the copywriting market, the statistics for that has absolutely plummeted. Like, it's shocking to see how quickly that's turned around. But then I look at my work and how I work and how I have no need for copywriters anymore, because I do have all these thoughts. I just don't have the time to really flesh out a 20-word sentence, but I can put the 5 words that make sense and ask ChatGPT to really scope it out for me. However, when it comes to AI as a whole, the most exciting part, or the part I'm invested in the most and TechT is invested in the most, is the data. And I don't think it's been spoken about enough in that way, but it's AI is fantastic. And right now you can pretty much like create an AI tool in a matter of days off the back of other training tools. other AI training tools. The power lies in who has the data and how they train that data, manage that data, and grow that data. So for example, at TechT for a while now, we've been working on a few models that can be able to detect and mitigate racial bias in language AI models. I love what we're doing. I genuinely couldn't love it anymore. And, you know, I feel like we didn't even come up with the idea because it's I feel so giddy when I talk about it. But the beauty in that is we are building the algorithms to be able to define or be able to detect if there is a racial element to the to a string of words in its foundation. And we own that. And the beauty of that is we'll be able to put that on any language, like any language model can have that, but the definitions and the identification of being able to say, this is how we detect this, this is how we mitigate it, exists within the data. I think that's why OpenAI stole the show and continues to do so. They own the data. However, I will be on TikTok at any given time and someone will be recording a video and it will be talking about how this is the new tool that's going to blow ChatGPT out the water and it's the next thing on the block. And then I look into it and there's that app or website or whatever platform it is their data is being trained on top of OpenAI's ChatGPT data. So understanding very simply that that is how things work makes it very clear that the most exciting and the most important thing to be invested in right now and possibly for the future, at least for the next couple of years, will be the actual data itself and how you're training it and maintaining it.
And are you doing that for clients yourselves? Are you the ones helping clients manage their data using AI? I mean, just thinking about, that's also where I see things get really interesting, is being able to build something that helps you speak in natural language to your business's data. Yeah, you're like everything, all of your learnings, all of your everything, and just being able to sort of manipulate that using language of, like, you know, just being able to sort of, as a prompt, whatever, saying, I don't know, what were our sales last quarter, or, you know, getting way more specific than that, but just being able to sort of pull that data out without needing, you don't necessarily need a human to go and find that data. But that's what we've been doing at the moment, is using our eyes and brains. But actually, if you could do that in an automated way, that saves an awful lot of time. And actually, why do we put so much value on sort of going and doing it ourselves when, as you say, AI is about making our lives easier? So, I mean, there's definitely still like issues with AI hallucinating and or, you know, basically getting things wrong. But all of this is just getting so much better so quickly. I think that's what kind of blows me away. Although, as you say, a lot of the new tools coming out is just like using OpenAI's API. So,
yeah, I think that's the funny thing about most tech products, businesses, startups. I'm a big fan of people starting things within technology, whether it's built upon something else or organic, intrinsic data, whatever else it's being built or how it's being built. But it's the cycle I've seen since I was 15. When there is a new technology, a new wave, a new something, there's this period of time of just a land grab. Whether it actually makes sense or not, it's all happening so quickly, so people don't really have the time to sit down and really dig deep into how it's happening, if it really adds value. And, you know, people will cash out. People say they'll build it up quickly, they'll sell it quickly, and they'll move on. And you've got to wait a little bit of time until the dust settles and then you'll see what actually remains. That's what's happening now. And it's natural. I can't say the history of, you know, technology startups and, you know, technology being this insanely large industry that it is, it's always been this way. So it's not a surprise. It's interesting to definitely see because I've never seen such interest, intrigue, financial backing. Seth Godin very famously and quite popularly has said, this has been the biggest innovation since the creation of the internet. And if you kind of contextualize that, we are going into a whole new wave of life, living, connecting. So of course it's going to happen. And of course there's going to be good and bad actors, but I'm enjoying the ride. That's all I can really say to that.
I've loved hearing your story so far and your views on everything from the sort of metaverse, AI, everything that's coming next for the internet. Yeah, you've made some really smart choices. So I'm wondering what your own tips are for the Women of Web3 community. Like, what should other people be taking forward from a sort of strategic point of view or from like their learnings? How do they push things forward?
So we have a saying at Tech Tea, and it's when people ask us what we do, and we kind of give the typical headline stuff, but then we kind of explain that the purpose of building early adoption innovative technology is that we build technology that truly matters. And it's that truly matters element that I really want specifically women to really adopt, because we get it a little bit more than men do. And the reason why I say truly matters is because I want us to build more of that. So my tip is, if you're building, investing, managing, working within the Web3 space, try and find out or decipher if what you're doing truly matters. And if not, find what does and do more of that. Because like I mentioned earlier, the dust settles. And when it does, nothing that matters goes to waste. It's always there. It's always going to exist. It's always going to thrive. And there's a lot of noise around technology at the moment, but the things that matter, and they can matter in different varieties. So when it comes to luxury fashion, a lot of people on the outside don't think many things matter, but a lot matters there. And a lot doesn't matter. And a lot is very superficial and very budget-led and target-led. But my tip is for us to build, work on, create more technology that matters. And that is the tip I have.
I love that. And that is also sometimes missing in Web3, is because of that rush to just kind of go and try things out, or as you were alluding to earlier, almost like rug pulls, essentially, of like, let's just try and make a quick buck. Yeah, there's this massive opportunity now to build the stuff that's going to stick around, that and also has truly solves problems for people and gives them a reason to want to use it. So yeah, I've really, really enjoyed our conversation and could have spoken for a lot longer. But lastly, Toby, where can people find you online?
So I am a big social media head, millennial, born in that generation, born in that era. So I am on LinkedIn, Toby Ajala, TobiAjala. I'm on Instagram, X, Twitter. Oh, I hate that. As Toby, that's TobiTobeTobey. And that's predominantly where people find me. Instagram, I'm big on. Twitter, I'm on a lot. I probably don't tweet as much as I should, but I'm on. And then LinkedIn, of course. So, and then, of course, Tech Tea, the business of my life, the love of my life, my firstborn, I like to explain. Yeah, we're at Tech Tea, TechTee.co.
This has been an amazing chat. So thank you so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you like this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.